Welcome to the One Thing Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Kokoska. You know, each one of us wants more. We want more out of our careers, our relationships, and our personal lives. At the same time, we want less. We want fewer distractions and less on our plate. Today, I've got Tim Leeb. He is the founder and CEO of Alamo Drafthouse. So, Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, Alamo Drafthouse.
Sure. Well, I got into the motion picture exhibition business back in 1997, and my wife and I both left science and engineering careers. It was careers that we had embarked upon, I guess just starting in high school. We were both good at math and science, and you just end up on this path. We realized it wasn't really our calling in life, and we wanted to start a new business that had something to do with what we really like, what we were really passionate about. We were both big movie fans, and we found ourselves opening up a mom-and-pop movie theater back in 97, and over the last 15 years or so, it's grown into a much larger company.
Well, and it's not just a movie house. Tell us a little bit more about what you guys do there at Alamo Drafthouse.
Well, I think one of our first distinguishing factors was we were a movie theater that served beer and food right to your seat. And over the years, I think we've become known for our programming and our unique events. And it all really comes back to the same idea from the very beginning that we wanted to build a neighborhood theater. The concept of a neighborhood theater, it started to die out in the age of the faceless, nameless multiplex. And we wanted a place where we would love to go and watch movies. And that same idea is how we still drive a lot of our decisions today.
Well, good for you. So real quick, just articulate the purpose of Alamo Drafthouse.
I've wrangled with this, and it's actually funny. I had a conversation with Gary when I was first meeting him, and I talked about our purpose, and I downplayed it. I said, well, Gary, it's not like we're, curing cancer. It's not like we're building artificial hearts. It's not important on that level, but really what we do is we make people happy. And I remember Gary very distinctly pounding the table and said, it's like, damn it, Tim, the only reason why people cure cancer or perfect the artificial heart so they can watch more movies. So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
I love it. So understanding the purpose of Alamo Drafthouse, then tell me, what's your one thing in business?
I read the book, and I've been through the One Thing class with Gary over at the Keller Williams headquarters. And by going through that process, I think I really refined what my one thing is as the CEO of Alamo Drafthouse. And we put together a somewhat lofty goal. So we're expanding now. We're trying to be a much larger company, and we're trying to be a larger company that stays true to those ideals that we set forth in the very beginning. And so the process inspired me to come up with a fairly lofty goal. And I fear that it borders on arrogance, so I say it with a grain of salt. But I'm concerned about the movie exhibition industry and making sure that the cinema-going experience is a compelling offering for people moving forward. And I see other companies not doing it right, and I want to do it right. And so if we grow and we expand and we stay true to our goals and our ideals, then our one thing, or my one thing as the CEO, is to shepherd this company such that we can save cinema, save the cinematic experience by growing to be a big company.
Oh, good for you. It's very compelling, and certainly you get people to follow you with a compelling vision just like that. So how have the One Thing principles changed or impacted the vision of your company?
Well, my big takeaway after reading the One Thing is the self-awareness that I am a horrible multitasker sometimes, and that I have a lot of other tangential aspects of the business that suck away my time. And, what is important, and I haven't 100% accomplished this yet, but I know that it's what I need to be doing right now. I need to build a strong team. I need better captains who can steer other aspects of my company and make sure that I'm not taken away from my one thing. So I'm in the process now of utilizing some of Gary's recruit select techniques to make sure that I have leaders in the company that can take other aspects of the brand, do them well, do them better than I can do them, while I focus on this goal of saving cinema.
Good for you. And I love the fact that you're able to admit and be transparent, saying there are people out there that can do that aspect of the job better than I can do it. See, many people in a CEO position or a leadership position, they think they have to have all the answers. Am I right?
That is correct, and that's my current pitfall. I am the captain of multiple things, and I'm feeling like I'm not giving the time that I need to for our theater expansion, whereas I'm focusing my time on a genre film festival that we produce. I'm focusing my time on a film distribution company that's also part of our brand, and I think it's an important part of our, you know, our overall brand strategy, but I need to be focused on my one thing.
Good for you. Now, Gary and Jay, they outline the six lies that really steal our productivity and beat up on our clarity. Which of the six lies, and you've probably alluded to them already, which of the six lies is the most challenging for you?
You got it. I've already said it. I've already admitted to it. I'm a multitasker, and I'm actively taking steps to stop that.
Congratulations. Good job. Now, they also outline the three commitments. What are the greatest challenges in holding these commitments to you in your industry?
I think it's that move from E to P. So I am, you know, entrepreneurial by nature. That's what I am. Some people have called me a serial entrepreneur, which is an even worse thing to be, in a way.
It just sounds so glamorous, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is fun. It is fun. But that's where I'm really trying to change my old habits and go beyond entrepreneurialism.
All right. Good for you. Breaking through from entrepreneurial to purposeful, through that natural ceiling of achievement, by doing what comes unnaturally. So how often, by the way, do you find yourself and your staff using the focusing question?
I'm starting to, this is a relatively new process for me where I'm breaking old habits. And so one thing I've done in terms of this is and this might sound terrible as a father, but I used to have a picture of my girls on my desktop, on my laptop. I have lots of pictures of them elsewhere, but I have twin girls that are 2 years old. But I changed it to have a sheet where front and center, I look at it every single day about what my mission is, what my purpose is, and what my job is, and what my one thing is. So I look at it every day when I start, and it's a visual cue for me to say, you know, keep your time block time sacred, continue to work on what's truly important for the overall growth of this company.
Well, good for you. Now, some people might say, oh, how terrible, he took the pictures of his daughters off of his laptop. Yet the bottom line is that the more often you stare at what you replaced it with, the more often you get to stare at them in person. Would you agree?
Yes, that is correct.
Absolutely. Now, Gary and Jay, they outlined that powerful exercise of goal setting to the now. Have you completed that exercise? And if so, what were your takeaways or your ahas, what we like to call them, ahas, from completing that exercise?
One of my biggest ahas, and I'm not sure if it specifically came out of this exercise, but you know, as I was goal setting to the now and thinking about the time I needed to dedicate to the individual steps of, you know, my daily, my weekly, my monthly of accomplishing the big task, is I had misunderstood the concept of time blocking in a way, and I was time blocking, but what I was utilizing that for was to catch up on emails. So it's really, I thought I was doing a good thing because every day I would block out a 2-hour time window where I would just catch up on emails, and I would empty out my inbox, and I thought that was a great thing to do every day. But I realized that that was taking me away from time blocking for my one thing.
Yes, we can all get caught up in that checkoff game. Now, the challenge is that the checkoff game, it produces no winners at the end of the day. It's focusing on your one thing, the one activity. When you do that, then it creates that geometric progression. It starts knocking the dominoes down for you. So congratulations on recognizing that. I'm curious, what other strategies have you gained used to identify those dominoes that exist in your world so then you can line them up and create the geometric progression?
Well, I don't know if it's a perfect answer to this, but when I was readjusting my time blocking and making sure that I was looking at spending time on the one thing, I also started time blocking out dedicated time for exercise. And I found that was falling away from my life, and I wasn't really getting the exercise I needed. So putting myself in the headspace of, you know, this is an appointment it was always the appointment that could be moved. I would put it in there before, and then ultimately people would want to have meetings with me and say, okay, well, I'll just skip going to the gym today because I've got to get this meeting done. So treating those exercise time slots, which ultimately make me, you know, feel more alert and more productive in my time, and treating those just as sacred as the one thing time blocks.
Good job. And once again, you've alluded to maybe an answer to this next question, which is, which of the four thieves is the most challenging for you to manage?
Actually, I think it's saying no. Maybe I have alluded to that, but it is. It's saying no to appointments. It's saying no to things that seem like they might be a good idea, but that idea, if you're saying yes to someone, then what exactly are you saying no to? And are you saying no to the wrong thing? And in fact, I was. So my schedule got very overloaded. I got mentally taxed by trying to shove too much stuff into one day, and now I have less things that I do in a day, and I'm actively making myself really hard to get in touch with. You cannot reach me on the Alamo Drafthouse phone tree, and I no longer feel the compulsion to get back to everybody on email the same day or ever sometimes. But
gotcha. So which part of Gary Keller's and Jay Papasan's book impacted you and the Alamo Drafthouse the most?
I think it's that true understanding of time blocking. As I say, I did it a little bit in the past, but I wasn't as vigilant as I should have been in breaking into those time blocks, and I was time blocking for the wrong reason. I wasn't time blocking for a long-term goal, the most important goal of the company.
Got it. Perfect. Now, Gary and Jay, they outline in the three commitments, one of them being open to accountability. So what does being open to accountability mean to you?
I mean, I'm in charge of the Alamo Drafthouse. And it's been that way since the very beginning. The business is going to fail, and the business is going to succeed on my shoulders. And it's my job to shepherd the brand and to take it to the right place and to set the culture in the company by which it's going to succeed or fail. So I think it's just being ultimately accountable for the success of your business and being ultimately accountable for the failures and understanding when you have failures that it's ultimately your fault. What have I done to, instead of getting mad at people beneath me, it's like, what have I done to not set the culture correctly within this business, and how could I have avoided making this mistake?
Good for you. Now, I know that Gary Keller has been coaching with you independently for about a year now, right?
Yes.
What have you gotten out of that coaching?
You know, I've actually gotten quite a lot. Gary's great. I mean, he's very focused. He's and not just on this concept of the one thing. I think my first training with Gary was Recruit Select. I had an understanding after that I had been too lazy about my hiring. I think I had gotten lucky with some good people, but then I've also put up with people that aren't absolute rock stars in my key positions, and that if we are going to become a world-class company, then it's not just me that has to operate at a very high level, but it's everybody that's my direct reports. And so the idea of making that such a important part of the business that I focus on it correctly.
Good for you. And many people in that position tend to get lucky, which is fantastic. And they identify an empire builder and they hire them and their company goes on to achieve great things. Yet what they rarely think about is, well, what's the cost of a bad hire? is not just what you paid them in salary. Am I right?
Oh no, it's a horrible iceberg effect. It's you know, they're in charge. If you only have three or four direct reports in the company, then if you haven't hired exceptional in those three or four, and you haven't hired an empire builder, then think about all of their hiring decisions and their hiring decisions and below them and below them and below them. So you can really devastate a massive chunk of the company by not having a strong leader at the top.
Good for you. It's a perfect answer. Now, tell me, have you built a bunker? I'm curious. A place where you can go and nobody's going to disrupt you and you have the ability to focus on your one thing.
You know, I thought I had built a bunker, but then, you know, during this podcast, my wife has been trying to signal me from the doorway, and I've been ignoring her. So, maybe my bunker isn't strong enough. I do work from home, and I have sort of laid down the rules of working from home. I think one of my biggest distractions is when I am at the office. Is just the layout and nature of the office is, you know, I'm fairly approachable and I like to be approachable, but people don't respect the time windows. They don't understand my time windows is not enough. So what I like to do is when I'm really truly time blocking out is I come home, you know, board myself up in my office, which is pretty secluded. I still struggle with it. I still struggle with the idea of it's, you know, my own, sweeping for minds, if you will, like, the fact that there's an internet browser, and I work on my laptop and my laptop is my life. All my notes are there. All of my work is there. And a lot of my work does rely on communication and correspondence that's via email. And so it's very easy to fall prey to email. It's very easy to fall prey to, just checking on stats and numbers that I don't really need to be doing during my time block. So I am a work in progress. I'm not perfect in this regard.
Now, I don't know if you're like me at all, Tim, and sometimes when we're in that time block and we're focused, we're almost begging for a distraction. Have you ever found yourself there?
Yes, I find myself there all the time. That's what I'm trying to solve in my own life.
All right, good for you. Now, what are your parting thoughts and words of wisdom for our listeners?
Well, I think when I first came to the one thing, I was like, oh, well, you know, this is all well and good, but I can't lead a life that is that singular and that focused on one thing. I have so many other interests and so many other passions that I want to pursue, either personally or in the business. And yeah, my biggest aha out of it was, and maybe this isn't the best way to end the podcast, but I think it was important to me to realize that it isn't about having a sole focus in your life on the one thing. It's just protecting enough time regularly on a day-to-day basis, a week-to-week basis, to focus on the one thing. And if you do that for a couple of hours each day, you can do whatever the heck you want for the rest of your day. You can. It doesn't have to impact your family life. You don't have to give up your hobbies. You can work on those as well, as long as you are dedicated and focused to the one thing. And I misunderstood that coming into the training, and it was only until, you know, fully going through it and reading the book that I understood that, and it made sense for me.
Absolutely. And what I found is that the book actually gives people in a high-powered position that find themselves very busy day in and day out to just simply give themselves permission to focus on that one levered activity every single day. And when they do that, well, then there's time in the day for everything else. So it's not about being disciplined in all things, right? It's about being disciplined in your one thing and nailing that every single day to create the geometric progression of growth within your business. So, Tim, I just personally want to thank you for your investment of time. If you wanted to find out information about Alamo Drafthouse, where would they go?
You can go to the website, drafthouse.com, and that will take you to everything you want to know about the Alamo Drafthouse.
All right. Well, once again, Tim, thank you so much for your investment of time, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Be sure to check out theonething.com, that's with the number one, to learn about our training events, our coaching programs and opportunities, and to participate in the One Thing movement. Until next time, be powerful, be productive, and be on purpose.